This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upward to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. And so you're now all unmuted or not? No. Okay. Then I'll begin with the first part of the talk. This I'm beginning with a talk from the Dhammapada, a little short verse and explanation, because it ties into the subject of tonight's talk, which is the five aggregates of clinging. And this is about a monk called Useless Potala in the title of the sutta, little sutta. There was a very, in the time of the Buddha, there was a very well-educated monk who was a senior monk named Potala, who taught the Dhamma to many, many monks. Because he knew the Dhamma so well, he became conceited and arrogant. However, he never put much time into meditation and had attained no jhanas or higher states of sainthood, like Sotapanna, for instance. So whenever he went, this was in the time of the Buddha, and whenever he went to pay respects to the Buddha always called him Useless Potala. Well, Potala didn't understand why he said that, but kept pondering on it. And finally, it came to him why the Buddha would call him Useless Potala. He finally realized the emptiness of his self, his own self, and decided that he really needed to do something about it. So he decided to leave that monastery one night and to go to a distant monastery in Savatthi, where there were many monks, And there were monks in a particular monastery that he knew well, pretty well. And he went there after the journey, and he asked the senior monk who knew him if he would be his mentor and teach him so that he could overcome his burden. And this senior monk knew Potala pretty well and knew that he was full of pride. And so to teach him even more, even to go down a little bit in pridefulness, he asked him, he told him that he was very busy and told him to ask the next senior monk in the line to be his teacher. And Potala did that. But that was only the first of a long chain of being passed on down the line of seniority to the very, almost the very end. And so finally, Potala arrived at a novice, a young novice who happened to be an arahat, very unusual. But this little arahat accepted Potala because he could see with his vision or his abilities that Potala was now prepared with this succession of humbling to accept his teaching and do what he said. So he gave Potala instructions, and Potala did as he was instructed and meditated on the true nature of the mind and body. This is what we're going to consider tonight, because we're going to study the aggregates, or the five aggregates of clinging, as they're called. Now, to go on with this story, the Buddha had observed Potala meditating ardently, and sent a vision of himself, of the Buddha. The Buddha sent a nimitta, a vision of himself, to Potala as in gratitude, in a sense, and he appeared before Potala and encouraged him to be steadfast and ardent in his practice with these words. And I know that this will enter the hearts of everybody in this class, because it applies to us too. Verily, verily from meditation arises wisdom. Without meditation, wisdom wanes. Knowing this twofold path of gain and loss, let one conduct oneself so that wisdom may increase. And in other words, meditate, meditate, meditate. Soon after, Potala became an arahat and returned to his teaching role at the other monastery. And as I said, as for the nature of mind and body, which the young novice told Potala to meditate on, this is our subject for tonight. And we'll start out with the five groups of clinging. I don't know if you're all familiar with the five groups of clinging or not. Have you all heard all about the aggregates before, many times? And am I repeating? No? Okay. One person made it clear that that's a no. I don't know about the other people. If not, this is one of the most essential subjects for a Dhamma talk, in my opinion, the aggregates. They're called the khanda in Pali, the khanda. Spelled khanda, if you want to look it up. They don't usually put an S on the end of Pali words, by the way. So we have the five khanda, which are considered us ignorant people to be our personality or self. They are, one, the physical group, the body, and all other physical things around us are considered part of the physical group, or rupa, rupa in Pali. And they're usually considered the four ancient elements, air, earth, fire, and water. These are the ancient elements that are still used in the Pali texts. And we consider them in a more spiritual way than modern physics. I'll put it that way. Feeling, the second one is feeling or sensation as a group. And that is usually taken to mean two things. One is it can be the six senses, which includes mind. It can be the six senses, the feeling or sensation, obviously, of the six senses. Or you can say that it's the positive and negative feelings and neutral feelings in both the mind khanda, and in the a body khanda. So if that's clear, it's just the feeling good and feeling bad and feeling neutral in all of the senses, including the mind, and feeling neutral, if I didn't say that. And the third one is the perception group or khanda. And that is a perception of the six senses. And I'll talk more about that in another subject soon. The perception group. You have the feeling and then you have the perception. It's a separate group in itself. And the fourth is mental formations or sankhara, the mental formations group, usually referred to by Ajahn Brahm as will, simply will, but it's the will of the talking and action, thought, speech, and action. And it's also called kama, because this is where kama is formed. The kama that goes with you in rebirth. Kama making, in other words. And the last is the consciousness group, which is, this, believe it or not, the six senses. The six senses make up the six consciousnesses, and Ajahn Brahm always emphasizes this, because people seldom mention this or even think about it as being six separate consciousnesses. But this is a fact. The fact of Dhamma. How are we doing on time? Okay. Now, when all five of these khandhas are present, we have the illusion of a self or personality, or at least of a human being, or another being, a dog, cat, or any other physical being. Now, this is sort of like, if you think of a cart, all of its parts are there, a cart with wheels and everything that a cart has, and something to connect it to, a motor and or a horse or something like that. If you see it, you say, oh, there is a cart. And you say it's one thing, a cart, even though you know, of course, it's made out of all sorts of different things put together. And so a living being, we say it's a living being when all the five khanda are together and making up that person, even though we forget or don't know that we are a combination of all sorts of processes. If you see, for instance, if you see a motorcycle, I'm trying to make this clear if it's not clear. If you see the parts of a motorcycle spread around a field, and you don't know, you just say, oh, there are some parts of a, what is it, a motorcycle or something? You don't know. You don't call it a motorcycle. You don't call all these separate parts a motorcycle. It's not until a motorcycle is all put together that you refer to it as a single unified object. So that's why we refer to ourselves as a self, an it, a personality, a human being, a being, and yet we're composed of these five groups. However, The five groups, and this is very important, the five groups do not have a separate independent existence. The five groups are always all together, and they're only separated for teaching purposes, for classification. This is how the Buddha classified reality, so that we could learn it, so that we could absorb it a little more easily. And you see in Paticca-Dhammapada dependent origination, we see that the mental khandhas that I mentioned, the mental aggregates are all connected. So it's important to remember that these groups or aggregates are not ourselves, not I, me, or mine. Not I, me, or mine. There are processes that affect one another, and these groups are empty of inner essence. Now, I think I'll go on to this later also, but I'll quickly go through the five groups as similes, but get back to the similes after we meditate, when we have a little more material, hopefully. For material form, the Buddha gives the simile of a lump of foam floating down the Ganges River. If you can imagine a lump of foam with all sorts of little bubbles, spray, dirt, flotsam and jetsam and so on, floating down the river, you can imagine that from a distance it might look like a thing, a one unified thing, and you might not know what it is until you can examine it. The second, a sensation or feeling, is likened, the simile is of a bubble. If it starts raining and drops of rain start splashing on the river, they will come up often as bubbles, which are momentarily in existence and look like they're something, and then they'll explode. The bubbles will pop. Well, these bubbles are likened to sensations, which are there one moment and then are gone. And there are countless, countless numbers of sensations in every snap of the finger, it says. I can't even give you the number, it's too high. But these sensations are going on from the six senses and the mind constantly. And they're like sensations. They look like, when you feel them at first, they look like they're something, or they feel like they're something, even though they have such a brief existence, and then they disappear, only to be replaced by others similar. The third one, perception, is the simile of that is mirage. A mirage, say on a at high noon on a desert, and we see in the sky a shimmering mirage of an oasis far off in the desert, and we think, is that a real one somewhere? Actually, the mirage often appears much lower, and it looks like it might exist as an oasis somewhere, and somebody might walk towards it, but soon they'll realize that this isn't a real existing thing. It's a thing, but it's an illusion formed by heat waves and so on. This is perception. Perception always deceives us, looking like something else, but formed of something that is real and actually there. Just as the heat is there, it's actually there. The desert sands are there. Everything that it takes to make physically to make a mirage is there, but there is no oasis. It's only an illusion. Next is volitional formations or will, and that's likened to the stem of a banana tree or a plantain tree. Why? Because the plantain tree has only, it does not have any wood on the outside or on the inside. It's made up like an onion of sheaths that are rolled together. Sheaths of leaves, in a sense, that are rolled together like an onion is. And there's no wood. In the simile, it talks about a woodsman going into the woods looking for heartwood. He wants to build something, say, for instance, he wants to use it or possibly firewood, but he wants wood. He doesn't want sheaths of leaves. And when he cuts it open, he cuts the crown off the top of the tree and the roots off the bottom of the tree, and then he splits it open, he finds only a roll upon roll of leaves, something like an onion. And so there is no heartwood. In other words, there is no essence. There is no bud, fruiting bud, inside of this tree, so-called tree. That's volitional formation or will. Why did they call it that? Because there are so many different leaves rolled together, just as there are so many activities going on in volitional formations, going on constantly. They're all rolled together and they all have a different aspect. That's one of the reasons it's called like similar to a plantain tree. And the best of all is the last aggregate, which is consciousness. And guess what that is compared to? It's compared to, the simile is of a magician who stands at a crossroads. You can imagine an X or a plus sign. And he's standing maybe with his assistants at the middle of a crossroads where there is the most activity and the most traffic, perhaps. And he produces an illusion. That's his job. This magician produces illusions and makes money that way. And he even begins to believe in the illusions himself. The mind, the consciousness, produces illusions. And we might think, well, we have a crossroads, which is four, one, two, three, four, and in the middle is five, and we have five aggregates, we have five groups. Now, there may be a connection between those. It doesn't say in the simile, in the sutta, I should say, it doesn't say that about the simile, whether the five has a definite significance. But it seems to me that there might be a connection between the five producing the illusions with the five aggregates all together. Now, I think we will go on to meditation. And in this meditation, what I usually do is breathing meditation, but in this meditation, I suggest, and you can do the meditation any way you want, but I would suggest on the basis of this talk that we look for examples. I don't mean to think a lot about this talk, but to simply be very aware of whatever comes up in your attention in the meditation. It might be a feeling. It might be a pain of some kind, for instance, or you might feel the heat of the day, or you might have thoughts about yesterday or tomorrow or any other thoughts, or what you're going to do if the car breaks down and you need to do that, or you might have feelings of hunger, and whatever you can think of that you might occur to you while you're doing the meditation, Just note those and let them go. Whatever comes, just let it come up and see that and let it go. That's going to be fuel, or you might say, for the talk. And it might reflect in some way with what you see. Because you'll be seeing things that are part of the five khandhas altogether. And this will be a way in to this subject. Just like Potala had to meditate ardently on the real nature of the mind and body. This is what he was doing partly. This is one thing. For instance, he might have been meditating for a while on the elements. That's one of the big subjects they do in a meditation on the body. You have the they have walking meditation, and they do the elements, for instance. Well, you won't necessarily be doing walking meditation, but you may see aspects of these five that I've mentioned and you may remember them or you may not remember them, but they may occur to you later. Oh, this is part of what I've been seeing in the meditation. In other words, you can use this meditation to teach yourself Dhamma or to see reflections of the Dhamma, rather than simply not to degrade breathing meditation. I would say if you want to do breathing meditation, go right ahead and do breathing meditation instead of this and ignore all these other things that come up. All right, so it's up to you what you do. But now we'll begin the meditation and go till it looks like 8:02 by my clock, which is right here. So, excuse me. 8:02. Now, you're muted, but are there any questions? If anyone has any questions, maybe they could be unmuted, but nobody seems to be responding to that.
I have a question.
Yes.
You mentioned before that five skandhas, they come all together.
Yes.
But is it possible that somebody has four or three of them?
No.
And
no, it is not possible to have a living being without five khandhas. And they all have to appear in the same place at the same time. They're all together. They're always all together. And you can't really separate them by looking at them. But you can see examples of what I've been saying. But you can't separate them out.
Okay.
And any consciousness that there has been or will be is always a product and always connected with the five khandhas. There is no state of consciousness that is separate from the khandhas. That's an important point. Yes.
And when you practice, all these five skandhas, they go off altogether, or we cut them off one by one?
I'm not sure. They go off together, or what was the last part?
Yeah, or they just go off altogether, or one by one, or...
They're all together, and they don't exist one by one. They don't exist separately. They're only classified separately. That's maybe a little confusing. That's why I was stressing it. The Buddha classified something that is always together in five ways, in five khandhas, to make it more clear to people. But they are always together.
It's just one unit.
Yes.
I understand.
Yes.
Thank you.
Now, if you want more information, you can always read the Dhamma books if you want. I encourage you to look into the Dhamma books. And in the Sanyutta Nikaya, there's a whole chapter on the khandhas, and also in Ajahn Brahm's books and other people's books about the aggregates, khandhas. So you can look those up, the aggregates, and you can look up more information about them if you want at a later time. So,
Guy has a question.
Yes?
Yes, I have two quick questions.
Yes.
As they are all working together, and you mentioned they are the five aggregates of clinging. So these are the five things that we keep as a whole person that keep us attached to all the things.
That's right.
That keep us in our defilement.
That's exactly right. Yes. Yes, that's why. Okay. Let me say one thing about that first. It's called clinging for two reasons. One is that these particular five are the things that cling to the defilements, as you were probably saying. However, it's these five that we, thinking of ourselves as a self, cling to and say, this is me. So we cling to these five and say, well, this mind is mine, certainly. If nothing else is mine, it must be my mind. It must be my mind. I must have a mind, right? Or I wouldn't even be here. So we cling to these five in different ways. Or our body, we say, well, I have a body, so certainly this proves that I'm here. And so on. See, there's two different ways of clinging. So you had a number two. Yeah, you had a number two question.
Yes, the other one is just a technical question, because you gave us the Pali words for number one and number four, Rupa and Sankara.
Yes,
and
sorry.
I started a new notebook for 23, and I just wanted to write down, if you knew the Pali words for feeling, perception, and consciousness.
Feeling is Vedana.
Vedana.
Are you writing them down?
Yeah, I do it fast. It's good.
Oh, Vedana. And Sanya is perception.
Sanya.
Yeah.
Then Sankara is volition.
Yes.
And consciousness is?
Vijnana.
Oh, yeah, Vijnana. I knew that.
I hope I got him right.
Okay.
It would be embarrassing.
Yeah, you did. No, I think you got him right.
All right, so...
thank you.
It is okay. Thank you for that question. Appreciate it. So shall we go with the... we'll go with the meditation, and so we'll go until 8 after 8. All right, so we'll start now. Well, let us start this meditation with a bit of metta to ourselves. May I be well, happy, and peaceful, and that applies to each and every one of you, to apply, to send metta to himself and to all the other members of the group and all those you wish to send metta to. May all beings be happy. May all beings be well, happy, and peaceful. And now let us turn to the meditation and relax our whole body, and make sure that this applies to our neck and shoulders, and we can follow the relaxation from the top of our head down through our shoulders and out through our arms and hands, any tension that's built up, and down through the trunk, letting the tension flow down through the hips and thighs and legs, forelegs, and down through the feet and out the soles, any tension can go out through the soles of the feet. And this, you can do this short little meditation or long meditation if you want any time that you feel that you see tension has built up and you want to relax. You go right ahead and apply this to your meditation and become more relaxed, as relaxed to the max, as Ajahn Brahm says. So relax and start your meditation with relaxation. And let anything that comes up be the subject of your meditation. Whatever comes up, see that. See whatever comes up. It may be your left ankle is bothering you and you need to adjust it, or you may need to adjust your posture in your chair, or maybe the heat is maybe it's too hot or too cold where you are. And if you can tolerate that, just let it go. Whatever comes, let it come. And whatever goes, just let it go. All thoughts of the past, of yesterday, let them go. All thoughts of tomorrow, of the future, let them go. Like you have two bags full of thoughts of the future and the past, let them all go. Just let the bags drop and be in the present without thinking about anything in particular. Leave your plans aside. You can turn to your plans after the meditation at any time. And just be aware of whatever occurs to you. The feeling of your body, a feeling of your hips pressed against the seat. The feelings of your face. Remember to keep your face relaxed, your eyes, your mouth. Don't tense your face. And keep your head balanced on top of your neck so that you don't produce a difficulty in your lower back. Keep your back straight and your head balanced on top. And your breath will occur to you as you breathe, you notice it. Don't pay any particular attention, just let the breathing go on, in and out, in no special way. This is not yogic breathing. And keep your mind on whatever comes up without holding to it, without clinging to it. Just see that it's come up and let it go. Don't judge whatever comes up. It all has a right to appear and then to disappear. Don't hold on to anything that's leaving. Just let it go. Let anything that wants to come up, come up. Let anything that wants to go, let it go. And if you have a feeling of tingling, this is a wonderful sensation. And I've mentioned piti before, and some people see the lights of a nimitta with the piti, and some people have sensations like tingling. It's another sensation. and all part of the aggregates. Piti, rapture, it's translated as rapture, is always accompanied by sukha, which means happiness or joy, happiness. Piti sukha, rapture and joy, or rapture and happiness. One of the benefits of meditation, because soon after this piti sukha comes jhana, if you just passively pursue this without grasping, without clinging, without chasing after, if you just let it come, of itself, let it come of itself. Rapture and joy. If thinking occurs to you in words, just see that, and that's another thing in the mind you let go. Just let go of it. See it occurring as an example. Example of the sankharas, the mind, the volitional formations. If thoughts of metta occur to you, just let them exist and let them go their own way. Continue them without forcing it. Just continue that metta. If you see lights, what are called nimitta, just let them exist. Don't grasp them or don't go after them. As I said before, just let them exist as beautiful mind objects. This is why we're meditating. This is what we're meditating for. If they don't occur to you, that's quite all right. My first teacher never mentioned nimitta, or these mind objects, these mind lights. Thank you. If you're thinking about some particular subject, just see that. Just let it go. If it returns to you, just see that and let that go. No judgment, just observation. And relax, remember to relax. Thank you. Continue to notice whatever comes up. Whatever comes up and whatever goes away. Thank you. Now, in these last few moments, we can extend metta to all beings in the world. May all beings be well, happy, and peaceful. May we ourselves be well, happy, and peaceful. And may all meditators in this group who are here now or joining us at some later time, may all of you be well, happy, and peaceful. May all of us be well, happy, and peaceful. And that brings us to the end of this session. It's 8:08. And when you're already adjusted to the light, if you turn the light on suddenly, I'll take any questions that you may have. And if there are no questions...
Bhante, I have a question.
Yes.
This is Sky. I always have a problem with volition, sankara, with your simile for the planting tree. Is that because we think we're solid and that we're just, the more we look, we can't find the solid, but I can't find the connection between the plantain tree and the will, the mental will?
Yeah, that's a little obscure. I'll have to agree with you. It's as far as I can say from what I've read and so on, the idea is more, I'll put it in a way that my previous teacher, Bhante Jee, said, it's like an onion. It's the way that the word onion is spelled. It goes on and on with an I in the middle. You've heard that before?
Yes, but
okay, it goes on and on in roll after roll with an I, us, supposedly, in the middle.
What does that have to do with
will? Well, we're willing these sheaves that are rolled up, and they're all sort of different, and you have the will for your thoughts, the will for your speech, the will for your actions, and they're all going on constantly, and they're all rolled up. They're all rolls.
Okay.
And they can be, you know, the old piano roll. Remember the old piano roll?
Yeah.
Well, it's sort of like that, I think, too. You know, it goes on and on mechanically. Tingling-ling-ling, you know, it goes on and on as long as you play it, as long as there's some kind of power for it, and it'll just keep producing these thoughts. You may have had thoughts in your meditation that go on, and you have to you have to let them go. Does that help?
I think I get it. That helps me a lot, because when I hear Bhante Jee say, volition and will, I always think of a stubborn child. No, I want it. No, I want it. That's mine. I want to eat now. Where is it now? You know, so I was thinking of it that more like a willful child. But it's more the will, volition, means that it's unending, all the I's, all the me, all the what I want to do, what's going next in my thoughts.
Yes.
And they're just... Okay, I think
that's just good. Thank you. That's good. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, I like that. Thank you very much. Is anyone else? Anyone else have any questions?
Yes, I had a question.
Yes.
Can you hear me? Yes, okay. Thank you for your talk. I had a long history of trauma, and because of that, there is one thing. It's like when I quiet my thought, my suppressed emotions will always come up. So I don't really can hold my meditation for a long time. So now what I'm doing is like I'm trying to add more metta into my practice. In the past, I was not able to do that because the negativity is so strong. But now I'm gradually able to do that. But it still had like a voice in me, like when I say something like, may I be happy or may I be well, there will be a voice come up that's saying that, like, I don't deserve it. I can't get it. Like, I don't deserve to be happy or I don't deserve to be well. And sometimes the voice is like, it will keep coming up when I like trying to do my metta. I don't really want to force my way through because I think that acceptance is really important. But is there any recommendation like to proceed the metta practice gradually and like, yeah, without like every time I hear the voice, I had to like give up the practice at all? Yes, thank you.
That's a difficult question to answer, and I've heard similar comments. This is true of many people. They hate to try to do metta even because it brings up negativity in them, particularly about themselves. And the first comment is that you always start with metta towards yourself. Because as Bhante-ji says, if you don't have metta towards yourself, it would be very difficult to have metta towards anybody else. And so you do start, generally speaking, the form is that you start with yourself and give yourself metta. And do you do that?
Yes, in the past, I would skip myself completely because I'm not able to do that. But now, gradually, I am able to like start with myself.
Yes, that's good.
But yeah, but when I do that, I will have like a lot of like self-criticizing voice.
I'm trying to think. Picture yourself as something that you dearly love or have great affection for, something it could be, and don't take this as a personal thing, it could be anybody, but as a pet, for instance, or a baby, who you have infinite love for, and picture that as you, and think to yourself internally, this is me, this is me. Okay? And keep doing that. Do that. This is you. And hold that and keep doing it as much as you need.
Also, one thing is that basically when you're doing metta, you start with yourself and then you go to other people, right?
Yes.
But like when I start with myself and then I go to other people, I will have other problems come up, which is that I don't know how to describe, but when I try to send my metta to other people, it will trigger kind of like anxiety in me.
I didn't understand that. What?
I will have anxiety.
Anxiety.
When I try to send my metta to other people. Like you basically go from like you and then your friend or like someone you love. But because I think I had this like abandonment anxiety with my friends or like anybody I love, then when I try to like go to them and send message to them, I will have this like anxiety come up. Is it better like not to do that, or like I just keep going?
There I would say to pursue doing it and asking why. Why is there this, ask why is there this authority? Why is there this anxiety? Let me see this. Let me see this and let it go. All right? This is a work that you have to do internally.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah, thank you.
All right? Anyone else? If not, I want to I'm going to read. The similes are in a sutta, and at the very end of the sutta, I wanted to read this that the Buddha said, quote, "A bhikkhu with energy aroused should look upon the aggregates thus," as we were talking about the similes and so on, "whether by day or night, comprehending ever mindful, he should discard all the fetters and make a refuge for himself. Let him fare as with a head ablaze." I love that. "Let him fare on his way as with a head ablaze, yearning for the imperishable state." That's at the very end of that sutta. I wanted to read that. And if there are no questions, then I wanted to talk about a little bit about, if there are no questions concerning the similes, that I wanted to go back to the...
Auntie?
Yes? Question?
Can you read that again?
Yes, so sure.
Could you read that again? A bhikkhu with energy...
A bhikkhu with energy aroused should look upon the aggregates thus, as we were looking at them, whether by day or night, comprehending ever mindful. He should discard all the fetters. Are you familiar with the term fetters? All right. And make a refuge for himself. Let him fare as with a head ablaze. This is his great determination. Huh? Yes? Yearning for the imperishable state. I want to finish. Yearning for the imperishable state. And what it says, look upon the aggregates thus, I'll read it again. The material form is like a lump of foam. And physics does say now that it, most material is almost entirely empty. Right? So it's right on. Lump of foam, stress and emptiness. And a sensation or feelings are like a bubble. They come up. They seem very powerful, these sensations we have, these feelings. Sometimes the feelings are go on and on and on, and they seem like they're never going to end, but they just disappear. They're made of nothing. really, these bubbles, they just disappear. Perception is like a mirage, deceptive, and I was going to read something about the mirage and the delusions of perception. Volitional formations, in other words, will formations, those things that our mind creates, as like a banana tree stem made up of sheaves that are rolled up, rolls and rolls and rolls and rolls. And and finally, consciousness is like the trick of a magician. It's a trick, and we're deceived into thinking that we're a self. We have a self that's I, and we have it or possess it. It's part of us, or we're part of it, and so on and so forth. And we have these delusions about that our consciousness creates about a self and other people being selves as well. All right? And shall I go on with this? Talking about distortions and perception. I mentioned this one time in a talk several months ago. There's a category in Pali, it's called Vipalasa, and they're the distortions of perception. And they apply to perception, to thought or consciousness, and to our views. Our views, meaning our understanding or wisdom, such as it is, our views. So these deceptions, these distortions apply to perception, consciousness, and to the views. I'll get back to that, but what are the four perceptions? To see the impermanent as permanent, to see suffering as happiness, to see what is without self as having a self, as I just was talking, and to see the impure as pure, to see the impure as pure. Those are the four distortions of perception that apply to perception, consciousness, and views in this way that you can see that perception affects thought, consciousness or thought. First you have a perception of something and it's incorrect and it's distorted, say. And then it affects your consciousness or thought and it becomes distorted in the same direction. And that affects your views. And then suddenly your views have the same distortion. And so you see everything that way. That's your view. However, if it's a loop, if your views change slightly, your perceptions will change. And then the change in perceptions will affect your thoughts, and the change in thoughts will affect your views. You know, like a... I think it's called a feedback loop in computer lingo. So those are called the four distortions, and I thought that was especially good to mention when you think about the mirage and perceptions, and these are the distortion of perceptions. You see a mirage, and these things are there. You see them, but they're somehow twisted. They're distorted by our perception. There is something there. In a mirage, there is something that it's based on, but it's become twisted or upside down. We see the world upside down. What's impure, we see as pure. It's upside down. Everything is upside down, our whole way of seeing things. All of these. Okay. And that concludes what I have to say. If anybody has any questions about what I've just said or anything before that, please go ahead.
Hi, Bhante. I guess I'm talkative today.
Go, good.
that is very fascinating. It reminds me of a saying, I don't know who made it up, but, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing every day and expecting it to be different. I'm sure I didn't say it right, but it's like samsara, the rat race. But like you said, you just have to change one thing, and it reminds me of Gloria's painful trauma. You just have to change one little thing, and it will start to change everything else. And I think that one little thing is really like Ajahn Brahm and Chanda says, you have to give metta to yourself. Hmm. It's not selfish. It's necessary to survive. You just have to. I never wanted to leave the Gloria, but it has changed me immensely. So you've got to work on that. Look at a blade of grass. Look at everything green. Look at your animals, the bugs, and then just sit for a moment and just try to give yourself metta, because then you can, you know, give it to others. You just give it to the one in the next room. And then I used to have an Irish sangha girl, and she had a lovely Irish accent, and she'd send it out to the car park. And then she'd send it out to Fort Lauderdale. And then she'd send it to, you know, the United States. I mean, you have imagination. You have to use your imagination. Buddhism, for me, is the best thing to cultivate my already very creative imagination. But imagine you love yourself. Just imagine it. And then maybe you'll fall in love with yourself.
Thank you. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
All right, I will say a quote in Pali, if you don't mind, a little short excerpt from one of our suttas. And then I'll say it in English so you know what I'm talking about. You may be familiar with it. It's very short, if you don't mind. Sabe Buddha Bala Patapa Cheka Nang Chayang Balang Arhatanang Tatejena Rakang Bandami Sabaso. What that means is, and these are the Buddha's words, not my words. He said, by all the power of the Buddhas, and all of the Pacheka Buddhas, and all of the Arahats, by all the power of all of the Arahats, I, meaning the Buddha, secure safety for you in all ways.